Welcome to Rewear the Fashion Pulpit, a podcast aimed at reintroducing new language around the way we speak about clothes. I'm your host, Singrin, and I use she, her pronouns. In each episode, we explore what it means to be a part of the fashion system and how we can be more intentional in the ways we forge a personal relationship with our clothes. In this episode of Rewear, I am speaking to Kay Hanna, a fashion lecturer and biomaterials researcher. When I came to know about Hanna's work with biomaterials and making her own vegan leather, I wanted to learn more about Hanna's rationale and processes. More importantly, I wanted to ask Hanna about her relationship with fashion and wear and what it means to be a fashion educator during a time like now. The process behind fabricating objects of nature does seem to provide a glimmer of hope for fashion. There has been increasing mainstream media and industry attention on biofabrication and the possibilities of it being a viable solution to the extraction of raw materials to make brand new clothing. But what are the potential risks and dangers of scaling it further? And what place does making and tinkering with biomaterials have in the larger sustainable fashion landscape? This episode is brought to you by Podcast Mate. Podcast Mate produces podcasts for iconic brands and market leaders. They do the heavy lifting for you so you don't have to. All you gotta do is press record. I know, having a branded podcast is one of the best ways to establish thought leadership and brand communications. It's another platform where you can communicate your brand values, have authentic relationships with your audience, and show your brand's personality while delivering value through quality content. The struggle is that's going to be additional work for your marketing team. And really, who has the time to do all the legwork, research, and production when you don't have an internal team who's an expert at that? You don't want your team to have to spread themselves thinly, right? You don't want to overwhelm them by adding more tasks on their plate, tasks where they don't have experience in, where they aren't an expert of. You know how the best companies handle this? They delegate the work to specialized agencies who are experts at producing high-quality branded podcasts. That way, you know for sure that your podcast is of consistent quality with everything that you do with your company's marketing efforts. That's exactly what we did with our own podcast. Rewear is an original production by Podcast Mate, and they do all the heavy lifting for us. Post-production, art direction, sound design, audio engineering, and content repurposing. Don't overwhelm your marketing team by adding more onto their plate. Delegate your company's podcast production to the team that does it best, so your team can focus on doing what they do best. Reach out to Podcast Mate so they can help you get the ball rolling. They will make your podcast production an easy breezy journey. They do the heavy lifting for you so you don't have to. All you gotta do is press record. Email them at nash@thepodcastmate.co. That's nash@thepodcastmate.co. Or check out thepodcastmate.co. Hi, Hanna. Thank you so much for spending Thursday evening with us and, you know, being on this podcast episode. Can you please tell us a bit more about yourself and what you do?
Hi, my name is Kay Hanna, and I am a full-time lecturer in the School of Fashion and Design over at MDIS Singapore. My preferred pronouns are she, they, and I'm currently in my bedroom wearing pajamas. Like I mentioned earlier to Sin, that I wanted it to be like pillow talk, so I wanted it to be a bit more casual, and PJs are what I feel the most comfortable in.
Yes, that's so nice. All right. Okay, so we are here today to talk about materials, but more specifically about biomaterials. And it's something that you've been experimenting with for quite a while now. Can you share a bit more with us about what you do?
So with biomaterials, it literally just started probably last August. I was taking this module, I was going to teach this module called Exploratory Practice, and it borders on sustainability, mm-hmm. right? So what in the module guides from our UK partners, we were given module guides, and in one of the footnotes, they were talking about, this is a recipe for vegan leather. I'm like, oh, okay, It seems like I have the materials, I have the right ingredients. Why don't I try? Because I feel like if I try it and it's successful, I can bring it. I can then bring it to the classroom, mm-hmm. right? And then I could explore it with my students. Mm-hmm. So I begin exploring biomaterials, more specifically vegan leather, out of kombucha, because I am a home brewer myself, right. and I just had extra scobies lying around, and I thought, why not? Right. Mm-hmm. So that began an entire a new chapter of biomaterials and exploring new materials, not just for me, but for the school too, and for the department, because we're learning something new all the time with, be it harvesting or growing or dyeing this this material.
Right.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, biomaterials have been around for quite a while now. It's got history dated back, to so long ago, but I feel like it's only sort of entered the conversation in the sustainability space. So, and I find that really interesting, like the transition from something that, used to be out of necessity or utility, or maybe just out of convenience, actually.
Yes. I think at the end of the day, the fashion industry is ever changing, right? Mm. And with our consumers, us as consumers, we are far more well-read. We are quote-unquote woke, right? And we want to know a couple of things about sustainability. We have access to knowledge, right, which is literally on our phones. So it's not very difficult for consumers to demand a change or to want to see change. With that, the industry had to change along with the consumers, right? So that's why we have a lot of brands who now offer either recyclable materials or garments made of recycled materials, or they have some kind of program where, hey, if you bring old jeans, you can get new jeans from us, things like that. So it is not new, but it's, I think, far more prevalent now, which is great, right? Still, what bothers me, of course, number one would be some companies who are greenwashing,
right?
They say that, this is made from sustainable cotton, or this is made from recycled materials, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But how many percent of their entire collection for that season is made out of that? Probably a small percentage. But then because that is what the consumer wants to see, right? We still have a long way to go, but it's there, but it's not the conversations is not how you call that? We're not having these conversations as often as we would like.
I think my first sort of exposure or impression of biomaterials is actually when H&M collaborated with Pinatex. Yeah, I think this was like in 2018 maybe, or 2019, when they had like a capsule collection that was made out of pineapple leather from Pinatex, a company, right? And I was like, wow. And I think I was still quite early on in my journey of discovery and, figuring out like, well, what is wrong with the industry? And I was pretty impressed, actually. I was like, wow. Hmm. I think not so much with H&M for using pineapple leather, but more so with the actual fact that we can make materials out of food, out
of scrap material.
Yeah, exactly. Thereafter, there were more materials that sort of like came about, like mushroom leather, spider silk. And they also sort of like, they weren't just prevalent in the clothing industry. I mean, maybe prevalence not the word to use, but like they weren't just appearing in clothing and sort of the things we wear, but also like in home goods or furniture. And I was like, wow, we're really going somewhere with this. Yeah.
Yeah. And recently there's mango leather too.
Yeah. Mango leather. Yes. Yes.
Right. But I feel as an educator, and I've been in the education sector for almost a decade now, I've seen how, we built modules, right? We look at modules and I've seen how it has dramatically shifted. Usually, probably in 2015, no one in the module, there's nowhere in the module guide that even speaks about sustainability. Probably like one off, and it's probably like a a secondary thought, right?
Right, yeah.
Now it's the entire module or the entire year is, or the entire term is given to sustainability. So I can see how it has shifted. And I think that's great, right? Because at the end of the day, my students or the fashion students are the next generations who might be interested in producing such biomaterials. I mean, I'm just one person, right? And because I brought this to my classroom, I've seen how my students have looked at materials. I've seen how my students have treated materials.
Right.
I've also seen how they are giving in more thought into weight, which is something I cannot teach them, right? Because if I just show them theory or like, oh yeah, see how the turtles are choking on plastic straws. I mean, you become very, it's a norm, right? But with practice, I have seen a shift in these students, which is great. And this batch of students are the first ones to do it. And I really don't think there's another module like that around in Singapore, especially. I think it's an exciting step.
Yeah, for sure. So have you noticed any sort of like interesting shift? Because you mentioned that, you know, you witnessed a sort of like a mindset shift. Does that translate into like the sort of work that they produce?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I mean, because my module is just one of those, it's one of the medium-sized module. It's not like a large main module, but they will go on to other modules, right? After me, so on and so forth. And these students are in year two. They still have one more year to go. So I have seen how they have thought about, oh, okay, maybe I should factor in zero waste draping instead of, you know, or zero waste pattern cutting instead of the traditional pattern cutting so that I could save a bit of material, save a bit of, you know, paper, so on and so forth. Because the production process or the sampling process is ridiculous, right? The amount of paper that you use, the amount of fabrics that you use, the amount of samplings that you go through.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one wrong sleeve, you got to redo the entire sleeve. So I can see that my students are currently thinking about ways about, okay, so what else can I do to improve my process? I think process is far more important than improving concepts, I think, because at the end of the day, process is where a lot of the waste is created.
That's such a good point, actually. I've never thought of it like this.
People always look at fashion like, okay, just something that you get off the rack, but there's a lot of work that is done behind the scenes that will contribute to waste. Or, you know, there's a lot of harmful dyes that goes into the lakes, to the river, into the water. We all know this. This conversation is not new, right? But then if the current students, my current students can have a shift in mindset, you know, they can bring that into their entire fashion career, which is great.
Which is so heartening, right? Because it's just
I know. And I cannot wait for them to, you know, go to year three and for them to tell me, oh yeah, because I want to do like something which is sustainable. You know, I'll probably cry. I'll probably be really happy. But a lot of people also don't see how difficult it is to make processes which are tested and tried, and you know they haven't failed. Because a lot of people say, if it's not broken, why fix it?
Right.
And the processes in fashion hasn't changed in decades, right? In centuries even. So it's really difficult for my students or anybody who wants to step a foot in sustainability to pivot, because that's all. Literally, when I was a student, I wasn't taught sustainability at all. It wasn't my time, right? But now it is here. So it's rather difficult to pivot, so we'll see.
And also like, just going back to when we were speaking about biomaterials, do you think like, what do you think is like the significance and the importance of biomaterials in fashion production, or even where does it stand in the overall sort of like landscape of the fashion industry?
Okay, if it was a pie chart, biomaterials would be the smallest pie, right? Mm. It has so much potential. No, yeah. I mean, yeah, there is no doubt about its potential. But I think when it comes to commercial viability is where people would start to question. Not just commercially, but also me as a creator, right? That I've been working with this, playing with this, tinkering with this. I'm thinking about, okay, how do I even waterproof vegan right. leather to make it biodegradable? Because if I'm talking about a material being biodegradable, I cannot go halfway, right? What's the point of me using like mushroom leather or whatever, but then I treat it or I finish it like calf leather. So I put resin on it, I put chemicals on it. I mean, I'm only solving half of the problem, right? So at this stage, the potential is enormous. Yeah, definitely. But then again, the applications are still very, very small and very niche. You know what I mean? It's small things like wallets or small things like notebook covers.
Right.
It's still very much a novelty. Yeah, instead of it being a norm, I mean, big companies like Pinyatex, right? They have made it a norm, which is great. But then there's only one, right? Yeah. Especially in Southeast Asia, we still don't have a lot of companies. I have seen an Indonesian-based company that does like micro leather. This is from mushrooms.
Yeah.
And they're doing great, right? But that's, again, one company. So right now, that's why I say if it's a pie chart, we are the smallest slice.
In terms of, I guess, the scale of impact, right? I guess, we're small, but
we are so tiny at this stage. But at least we're having conversations and at least we're putting it into classrooms where I feel that besides, you know, practicing it, being aware of it is something that, you know, we'll make the students think about materials differently. Just having conversations about it.
And
When I was growing the vegan leather and people were just walking past it, because it's right outside our studio, and people are like, what is this? So smelly. What is this? What nonsense are you guys doing now, right? And then once it's dry, once I've dyed it, and they're like, oh, cool, it really does look like leather, right? people are constantly shocked that what this was brewed but in tea. Oh, okay. I never thought it was possible. So for me, biomaterials should be accessible to everybody because literally you have the ingredients in your kitchen. Right? So
yeah.
That's what I'm trying to do with the modules, and I'm also trying to do it like you know, when I have conversations with whoever. And they ask me what I do with my biomaterials, and then I let them touch. It's you can literally see their eyes kind of like, ooh, okay, interesting. Because they never thought it was possible, especially not in Singapore. It gets overwhelming. To be honest, it gets really overwhelming. Like you, one person, you have this crisis at like 3 a.m. Oh my God, how do I want, like, what do I do? Because I want to talk about sustainability, but I still have habits which are not sustainable. And then I have all these conversations with myself, right? But I feel like if I'm trying and I'm bringing it into a platform like such as yours, right? At least I can pick a couple of interests. Right? Just a little spark is all I need. Sometimes at 3 a.m. I'm thinking, oh my God, like I talk to my students or like I preach to my students about being sustainable, but are my habits sustainable? You know, and then you reflect. And then while you reflect, you realize that, okay, habits are very hard to break, especially when you have been growing in a city, right? Where sustainability is a privilege. I keep telling my students that sustainability is a privilege because other people around the world, there are some communities that do it, like you said just now, out of necessity. Right? And it's not for us, we're like, oh yes, sustainability, but for other communities, this is their daily life. This is their reality. It's very different from our realities when we are living in a city such as us, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing this up. And thank you for, you know, bringing up the nuance behind sustainability and all sustainable habits.
Before I start the module, I always ask my students this question for them to like really reflect.
Mm-hmm.
If only 5% of the entire global population have access, have resources and have the knowledge of sustainability, and only 5% of the global population is able to, you know, apply it to their daily lives, is it truly sustainable?
Mm.
When there's 95% of, you know, everyone else who is unable to. Yeah, because unfortunately, when we talk about sustainable lifestyle, sometimes it comes with a price tag.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not cheap.
Yeah.
And not everybody will have that kind of resource.
Especially the sustainability that is sort of more popular or made popular under capitalism.
Romanticized, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is what I wanted to say, but then I didn't want to go there.
Yes.
Thank you for saying it for me.
Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
A lot of sustainability is very romanticized by either celebrities, it's endorsed by like, you know, influencers. But then is that really sustainable?
Yeah. Hmm. Like you said, a lot of people practice it out of out of the set. Because it's a necessity. And that in itself is so much more sustainable than, say,
and us
buying a glass straw or a metal straw.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Especially when my students say, oh yeah, I'll just use cotton. I'm like, okay, where are you getting this cotton from? Is this cotton sustainable? How can you prove to me that cotton is sustainable when cotton is one of the material that takes up the most water?
Mm.
It takes up the most labor. Here's the thing, the price of cotton has steadily risen up because the entire world is burning. So can you? So whenever I see text that says sustainable cotton, I'm like, really?
Yeah.
It's a little difficult for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah. And also I think it has almost become like almost like an excuse or some sort of like marketing language that big fashion corporations use and excuse themselves for using synthetic materials. I'm not sure if you've seen that latest, I don't know if it's like a blog post or like an article that was published by H&M that sort of like was explaining why they use synthetic fibers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll send it through to you. Like, I think you will find that pretty interesting.
Okay, but here's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Not all synthetic fibers are bad.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not all of them are bad.
Yeah.
How they are processed can be bad.
Yeah. And how they're extracted, right? Like what?
Yeah. Can be bad. Because some of them legit, they recycle, they use recycled plastics, they break down old clothes and they turn it into new fabrics. Fine. Fantastic. But the processes that comes along with that can be quite, harmful. Yes. And also, again, in that breath, I want to talk about like how not everybody can afford sustainable cotton, maybe.
Yeah.
Sustainable linen.
Organic cotton, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Natural fibers. Not everybody can afford it.
Mm.
Let's be real, because cotton, linen, natural fibers are very expensive.
Yeah.
So that's why at the end of the day, the evil really isn't synthetic fabrics, because, you know, if everyone is only lobbying for natural fibers or natural fabrics, it's either the somebody has to lower down the price of cotton or we have no other alternatives, right? So, not all synthetic fabrics are bad.
Mm.
At the end of the day, a lot of synthetic fabrics were created for function, right? That's what people forget.
And function, to almost replicate that sort of like function that natural fibers have, right?
Yeah. So not a function could also be with technology in the sense where fireproof fabrics, water repelling fabrics, which are needed in some professions.
Yeah, for sure.
So so that is where synthetic fabrics excel, right? Synthetic fabrics with technology added into them. They completely excel in that spectrum.
Yeah. I think also what I was going to say earlier was that we cannot sort of talk about the benefits or the downsides of materials without speaking about the scale that they are produced at, that they are manufactured at. Going back to biomaterials, if you could just maybe walk us through the process of how you've been creating these new materials. I mean, they're not new, but like, yeah, new to us, right? And also, if you've met with any problems or anything that you had to troubleshoot along the way as you tinker and create these materials.
Like I mentioned just now, I only had like a footnote and a recipe to go on. And I was wondering, okay, number one, can I get it in Singapore? Right. Because we are all in lockdown and there's no way I was going to like get things flown in. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So can I find it in Singapore? That's one. Number two, how big of a scale do I need? Do I need like a large factory to do it?
Or like a lab?
Yeah. How professional can I, what kind of professional skill can I achieve, right? Because at the end of the day, I always keep telling my students, sustainability or the materials that you create has to be accessible to people. That means if they are able to create it in the kitchen, great, right? Because that's how the ball keeps rolling.
Yeah.
So a lot of problems I also find out is that a lot of the research done is... from the Western part of the world. That means they have other materials or other chemicals or other, stabilizers that I do not have. So far, there really isn't any talk about any creators or thinkers from Southeast Asia. Maybe they are. Maybe they're not talking about it, which is unfortunate. I would love to talk to them, right? That is another one. So basically, I had to wing it, right? I had to figure it out myself. I found out that, okay, so SCOBY basically grows into whatever shape you put it into.
Right.
So I had to figure out the conditions of, if I wanted to grow it into this big or like how big can I grow it and how long, what kind of measurements do I need? Will this recipe work for like a large piece? Things like that, right?
Right.
So I had to figure all of this out. And one thing about SCOBY, even though it's resilient, it will grow anywhere. It does... Yeah, it is so resilient. Oh my God. It will not die. I tried. It just will not die. But what I needed to also understand is what kind of humidity does it like?
Right.
Does it like full sun? Does it like it warm? Does it like it, does it like it humid? I don't know all of this, right? Because I've only kept it in a jar to brew kombucha. I've never had it in, I've never grown it for the sole purpose of growing vegan leather. So those are one of the problems. And I didn't really have anybody to like ask questions or bounce ideas off from.
Yeah.
So all I did was read research papers. And like, there are a couple of creators who are based in the US who have tried to share their recipes and I've tried replicating it, but to no avail, right? So again, I couldn't go like, this didn't work out. What happened? Can you tell me what to do? Can you send me materials? I can. So literally whatever I've done is based on either pure luck, really pure luck. Pure luck. Yeah. So for the ones that I'm growing with my conditions over in my studio on campus, it takes about a month and a half to 2 months for it to grow to a certain thickness.
Okay.
Because SCOBY is about 95% water, right? So even if it was this thick, it will, thin down to almost nothing. So I got to find like a sweet spot for it to go like, so this is a sweet spot because I know it will dry down to like probably 2 mm and 2 mm is strong enough.
Right.
A lot of testing,
So, because you were showing me the kombucha leather earlier. So, how long did it take for it to grow to like that?
This one, so what I did was literally I took the largest container I had, which is about a meter and a half by half a meter, right? It's not that big, but that's the biggest container I had.
That's a huge container.
I feel like the bigger the better, right? Like,
yeah,
do
yeah.
it. If it fails, yeah. okay, law, too bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it worked, right? Mm-hmm. So it took me about 3 months, about 2 to 3 months for okay. me, for the first batch to grow out. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of days for me to wash, to dry, and to dye it.
Okay.
And then after that, I have to like really dry it. Because there's a certain, I don't know if you smell SCOBY or kombucha while it's brewing. It's not very pleasant.
Right.
Okay. So a lot of people go like, it's so smelly. What is this smell? You know, and unfortunately, that is the defining trait of vegan leather or like my leather or kombucha okay. leather.
Yeah.
So that is also one of the reasons as to why commercial viability is still not there
right,
yet.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, so it took about 3 months for me to figure it out. And then, yeah, thankfully, it's one of the better pieces I've had.
I guess it sort of like, it's like the smell of like fermentation, right? Because you are like kombucha brewing yeah. is fermenting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
I'm used to it by now, but mm-hmm. if you're new to it, you'll be like, okay, something smells like wet socks.
Right.
It does smell like wet socks. Yeah.
Right.
Not everybody's comfortable with wet socks, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Like a very tangible way of knowing that you are so involved with making your own sort of materials at home yeah. that all of your senses are being like engaged.
Yeah, it's completely normal to me by now, right? Which, I mean, because it is also a very hands-on process where you have to brew the tea, you got to let the tea, you know, go down to room temperature. You got to feed I call them my babies, by the way. So I got to feed my children. After I feed them, I got to wait for them. And then 2 weeks later, I feed them again. Mm-hmm. So there is no part of the process which you just like, you know, hands off. It's constantly, I got to get my hands dirty. I got to flip it over and see, oh, is it thick enough?
Right.
I got to see about the condition. Is there any mold? So on and so forth. Yeah. So it is a very hands-on. And I wanted to bring that to the classroom too, because a lot of students, I feel that after a while, they get quite disconnected.
Right.
Yes, they have materials. Yes, fashion is a very hands-on, you know, school.
Mm.
But they get very disconnected from making materials. Because why make materials? You can buy it from somewhere, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I wanted to bring that back to the classroom. We are actually trying to have a garden actually on campus where we will grow our own like vegetable dyes and whatnot.
Wow.
Yeah, things like that. Because I feel that at the end of the day, if you can go back to basics, right? What can stop you? Nothing can stop you, right? If you can make dye out of carrots and onion skins, you're set for life.
Yeah,
right?
You're so self-sufficient. You can just die.
Yeah, that is my entire goal, right? To be so self-sufficient that I can move to the middle of the woods and be fine.
Yeah.
That is my goal in life, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good goal. That's a good goal.
Yeah. I'm working towards it.
Yes, yes.
Chasing Flow State is brought to you by PodcastMate. They produce podcasts for iconic brands and market leaders. If you like how this podcast is produced, reach out to PodcastMate. They will walk you through the podcast creation from scratch to launch. Visit their website at thepodcastmate.co.
How has this entire process sort of like informed you of how you perceive the way you see clothing now? Like how it's sort of like affected your own habits of wear?
I mean, I wake up at 3 a.m. thinking that, okay, how can I be more sustainable? And like, am I hypocrite, right? So that is something that I would have never thought I would even have a couple of years ago. Never. Because, I mean, being in fashion, unfortunately, you are constantly surrounded by things you want to buy.
Yeah. All the time, for sure. Right? Yes, yes.
It's always like, oh, that dress so nice, I want to buy.
Yeah.
Oh, this shoe so nice, I want to buy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Now, instead of me constantly like browsing or like, oh yeah, I want to get this. I'm more like, okay, do I need this?
Mm.
don't I have the same one, just in a different color, right? I'm more self-aware of my, you know, hypocritical self,
right?
You know, and how my, how I'm spending my money and to whom, right? Because I'm doing all this preaching about sustainability, but if I am not that, it's quite useless, right? So I'm also, I also see a couple of changes, not just with me, but in my students as a collective. They now talk about sustainability. They now, when they are going to start a new module, start a new project, they always will have an angle of sustainability to it. Not just because I remind them of it, but because they naturally now they think, oh, okay, how can I make the processes more efficient, more sustainable, and therefore saving money on them, on their side, and also, you know, creating a better, more ethical, and less harmful collection. Because at the end of the day, people need to remember that fashion is one of the biggest pollutants. Okay, not just from the consumer side, from the processes, from the get-go, it is the most harmful. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, if society didn't dictate us to wear clothes, we would none of us would be wearing clothes. But unfortunately, we have to. So right now, all I'm looking at is how do I prolong my wear? How do I prolong my clothes? How do I mean, thankfully, I have the skills to, you know, patch up. Patch my old clothes, if it tears, whatever. I have a pair of pants that I've been wearing for like 12 years. Thankfully, I still fit, right? So I just found a hole on it. And I'm like, you know what? I'll just sew. I have not even thought about replacing it, right? Because I love it so much.
Right.
And I've had these pajamas for like 7 years. So it's something like, I feel like I'm changing my awareness in terms of spending. Because personally, that was my biggest problem.
Yeah, I think it's almost like an inevitable sort of spending, actually, like being in the fashion industry, like teaching at a fashion school, teaching at an art school, and just surrounding yourself with, you know, everyone who probably wears a different outfit every other day.
Every day.
Exactly. It's not...
And at one point of time, there was a lot of shame about you, like, repeating outfits. I really don't care now.
There was a point.
There was a point, right? And people would shame you, like, didn't you wear this, like, yesterday or 2 days ago? I'm like, I have a washing machine. I can wash it. Like, right now, I'm so glad I'm at that age where I really don't care. Maybe when I was younger, I would have cared. But I think with age, I have, I have better priorities. Instead of this, you know, oh no, I wore this pants like 2 days ago. Should I not wear this pants today? I really don't care. Which is a very good attitude to have. You know?
And I'm glad that, you know, that's sort of like imparted to your students also, and for them to see, to almost like have someone, like have a role model almost, and be like, hey, my teacher is so cool. Like,
I hope, cool, you know, I really hope. One can hope, right?
I think
right now also, with the conversations that we're having, especially with social media, I mean, with the good and bad of social media, there are a lot of conversations like this which are fronted by young, you know, young adults or youths, which at, when it was my time, I didn't have all of this. So that is also great that conversations are starting. Not only that, people are actually showing, oh, so this is how I take this skirt and turn it into a top so that you can prolong the wear, or here are some tips so you can be sustainable. So that is great, right? And us having this platform, sorry, you having this platform and then having a podcast about it, again, it's something that one could dream, can only dream of a couple of years ago.
And I guess it's also quite, it's actually very heartening to see people almost like sort of create, sort of mending their own clothes and mending worn clothes and repairing them, reworking them, upcycling them. And also, you know, like creating your own freaking biomaterials in your own kitchen is also such a cool stand to take. Such a cool stand to take against the culture and system of overproduction and mass consumption.
Some companies which are you know, quite big companies, mm-hmm. who are currently producing biomaterials, mm-hmm. and I've reached out to them, right? Mm-hmm. I've tried to email them, you know, hey, like I'm from this school, like, yeah. Would you like to speak to my students, or maybe can you share some of your, you know, secrets about how to waterproof it, so on and so forth? And I have heard zero back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. So this was the gatekeeping that you are mentioning, right?
Yeah. Right. So I feel, of course, I understand. It is something that they have worked very hard on. They have put in a whole lot of money into research, right? R&D, and of course, it's something that they want to, you know, they want to gatekeep. I completely mm-hmm. understand, mm-hmm. but I also feel like because sustainability should not only belong to a certain group of people.
Yes, yes.
For people who can afford it, mm-hmm. sustainability should belong to everybody, mm-hmm. right? Especially knowledge about, you know, how exactly. to create things.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
Then I feel then it's effective or not. Yeah. It's just gatekeeping.
Yeah. It's almost like only people with capital or people with investment, yeah. people with money can.
I'm just an educator, man. I just yeah. want to learn how to make things in my kitchen. I'm not going to suddenly open up a company and sell like footwear out of biomaterials, right? Mm-hmm. I just wanted to bring it to my classroom and show that it is possible. Mm-hmm. And therefore, my students should do it. Mm-hmm. And when they move on to their final year collections, that therefore they have another alternative option, mm-hmm. right? And not mm-hmm. just the options or the materials that they can find any, you know, from the stores. Mm. Yeah, that was all that I wanted.
Yeah. I guess it's also like due to the state of the industry because competition is so high, and which is why the fast fashion industry is so opaque, right? The supply chains of fast fashion and fast fashion companies mm-hmm. are incredibly not transparent because mm-hmm. they're just so afraid of, I don't know, like either competitors like learning about the prices or like where they produce or where it's like
yeah.
the effect of this entire race to the bottom that's sort of like allowed.
I mean, at the end of the day, it is a business.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Fashion is a business.
Fashion is a business. And fashion under the capitalistic system, like mm-hmm. sustainability is always
at the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I say we are the smallest slice mm-hmm. of this $1 trillion empire, yeah. right?
Exactly.
We are the smallest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. We are that novelty.
Yeah. In their language. In marketing yes. language, you are niche. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, I'm niche.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're niche. Would you like to share okay. some?
Do this.
Yes.
Okay, so this was one of the first few kombucha leathers that I made. Mm-hmm. This was the one that took about 3 months to grow. So as you can tell, it is rather thin, but it is strong enough where I could not tear it.
Wow. Like, okay. So you're like applying force.
Really
yeah.
strong. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm applying force and I'm unable to tear it. What I really love about this is that the texture of the SCOBY looks exactly like leather.
Mm,
and this was dyed with a batik dye, which is organic. And again, like I said, if I'm going to do it, I got to do it right.
Yep.
So I'm going to, that's why I use organic or mm-hmm. Vegetable dyes to dye my vegan leather. So all you need to do to get this leather is to just find SCOBY.
Mm.
You know where I found my SCOBY? Via Carousel.
Wow.
I found a very sweet lady who was selling or giving away her SCOBYs for like $5. And she's like, okay, I'll teach you how to brew it because I really wanted to brew.
Okay.
Yeah. Like this was not even in the picture, right?
Yeah.
Because I really was like, what is kombucha? I want to try this. I wanted a new hobby.
Yeah.
So I went on Carousel. I found a lady who was selling her SCOBYs and she taught me how to brew. Like, okay, cool.
Wow.
That's nice. And from then, like I had extra SCOBYs, right? They just multiply.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just took one of it and mm-hmm. started growing it. Mm-hmm. So another resource or where you can find SCOBY would be, I got it off Facebook Marketplace. I got it for free, right?
Wow.
Free. So this lady, another lady, so sweet. She came back from Australia. She had to move back from Australia and she had like a whole jar of it. I told her like, okay, I want to collect as much SCOBYs as I can because I wanted to grow vegan leather. And she was like, okay, take them all. Literally, wow. She just took an entire jar, like, which wow. is so, so heartening. She said, if you need more, just let me know, right? So ask around. Mm-hmm. You will always be able to find somebody who's giving away or selling away their SCOBYs for really, really cheap. Mm-hmm. Legit $3, you'll be able to find it. I was also very lucky because a friend of mine was a home brewer and he didn't know what to do with them anymore. He didn't have the time to upkeep it. Right. He gave me an entire jar. So that was like about 80 SCOBYs.
Wow.
So, legit, I've never run out of SCOBYs.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
Around. So all you need to do is to have either black tea or green tea.
Okay.
You can use a mixture of both. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because this is not for consumption, right? It's just to grow. You just need to have a bit of tea for your SCOBYs to grow. You just need very sweet tea.
Okay.
Sweet and strong tea. So what I do is I take about 4 liters of water. Mm-hmm. But you also have to understand like my containers are rather large. So please scale down. Mm. So I use like 500 grams of sugar. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of sugar. Mm-hmm. And about 20 bags of tea.
Okay.
Just dip it in there for a bit. I mean, you have to use boiling water, but never feed your SCOBY boiling water. Your SCOBY will die. I mean, because SCOBY literally means a symbiotic colony of yeast and of bacteria and yeast, right? Mm-hmm. So you need all of that to be in the proper temperature or not, your yeast will just die off if it's too hot. So you got to wait for it to go down to room temperature before just adding it into your SCOBY. And all you got to do is wait. Just check on it. Mm-hmm. Cover it up, of course. Put it somewhere safe. Don't let your cat go near it or, you know, things like that. What I noticed is that a lot of fruit flies love the smell of my kombucha, right? So they will land on it and then there will be maggots. Trust me, I've seen it. It's not pretty.
Oh,
so
wow.
Cover it well.
Okay.
Keep it where you can constantly check on it.
Right.
But put probably a cheesecloth or, you know, cotton over it.
Mm-hmm.
Let it grow. That's it. Once it's done, once it's about 4 cm, 6 cm, what I notice is that my sweet spot is about 6 to 7 cm. The longer you can let it go, just let it go. Don't forget to feed them every week or every once every 2 weeks. That's it.
With the same kind of feed them with water and sugar?
Yeah. So you feed them with tea, sweet, sweet tea.
Okay.
Right? That's the only thing they like.
Okay.
Right? I tried other things. They don't like it much.
Okay.
So once you're done with it, let's say you found out that, okay, I'm very comfortable with this thickness. I'm happy. I want to harvest. What I need you to do is to remove it very carefully. Wear gloves if you want to, because your hands will stink. I'm used to it by now. Run it under running water.
Okay.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Wash off all the excess yeast threads. So there will be like threads on it. Those are yeast, right? Wash it off, clean it up. And then if you want to dye it, that is the stage where you should dye it.
Right.
You can dye it with coffee. You can dye it with food coloring. You can dye it with, you know, natural dyes. Whatever dyes you have, in hand or in your pantry, use it. Because SCOBY is incredibly porous, it loves to, you know, just...
Take all the water.
Yeah, they love it so much. So that's when you your SCOBY will just soak it up and then just let it soak for about 24 hours. Next day, wash off the excess, dry. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, here's the thing about drying also that I found out. Never dry it in direct sun, like at noon. It will turn into a crisp. Like this is very like vegan leather that I'm holding up right now is very pliable. It's very soft. It's very strong. It holds its form. But then I also have some, like, let me show you what I mean. If it when I say it turns into a crisp, can you see how shiny? Okay, I'm holding up another vegan leather piece, which is extremely shiny. It's not shiny because I put anything on it. It's shiny because it is a crisp.
Right.
It is
right. Okay.
It is not as pliable. It is it's falling off at the edges.
It almost feels like plastic. Paper. It looks like plastic.
Yeah,
it's got a sheen and a plasticky sheen to it.
Yes, correct. So, and I also found out that it will tear. So with no effort, right, that it will tear.
Right.
So try to put it in indirect sun,
right,
or afternoon sun.
Okay,
that's it.
Indirect sun.
In a couple of days, let's hope it doesn't rain. If it rains, then sorry, it's gonna take longer.
Wow. Yeah. So that's
after
how
that,
that's
go.
Oh, wow.
There are other recipes online which requires you to cook your slushy or cook your, you know, whatever you put in, whatever materials you're trying to work with cornstarch and vinegar. Okay. Those are fine, but let me show you what it does. I'm going to hold up. So I mentioned to you before we started that I'm working with OPP, Ocean Plastic Purpose. So they are a great, you know, social enterprise that is working with seaweed, right? So I reached out to them hoping for like to work together with them to create something new with seaweed, because I'm completely amazed at the fact that Singapore has its own native seaweed species, and they are different in every parts of Singapore. So they have collected a couple from Sentosa, East Coast, and Pasir Ris, right? So I'll show you what it looks like cooked. So one comes with the cornstarch vinegar recipe, right? So it's really very I'm holding up one of the samples of seaweed mixed with kombucha, which is cooked with cornstarch and vinegar. It's very squishy and soft.
Okay. Yeah.
So this in the sustainable industry is called bioplastics.
Okay.
Yeah. So bioplastics is where you mix like cornstarch, you mix vinegar with it, and you cook it over a stove. So, but unfortunately with this, it's not very strong. Like I'm ripping a corner off, right? So it's not very strong as of yet. Again, you can, you know, add more or add less of a couple of your ingredients, and you have different types of, results. So this is a couple of my other experiments with seaweed, just purely seaweed. So again, they just fell off, right? So which is still unfortunate, like maybe it's too thin, so on and so forth. Again, this collaborative effort is still very new. I'm still trying trying to figure it out. One cool thing about OPP is right now they're trying to clean up the waters in Pasir Ris beach to save the kelongs, right? What they're doing is they're putting mussels and seaweed lines into Pasir Ris beach because mussels will help clean up the water.
Okay.
So what we're trying to do is trying to use the threads from the mussels, the byssus threads from the mussels, to create silk from it. So again, something that I've never done before. So it's going to take a while for the mussels to grow because they started off like little babies like that. So they are currently at this stage. Once they are fully, adult, we'll be able to have the byssus threads and try to, you know, make new materials out of it. I think that would be quite an interesting project. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm like lost for words because it's such a cool project, and why is no one like talking about it?
I don't know. That's why I'm talking about it.
I know.
So we have until like probably early next year to figure something out with that, with the seaweed and my kombucha and the mussels. I think it would be quite an interesting thing to do because we also, there are research papers that are out, that are published that actually proves that mussels themselves, they create a secretion and also therefore a film that keeps it waterproof. So if we can find out what it is and how to extract it, can I put it on my vegan leather to waterproof my vegan leather?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is a collaborative effort with everybody, right? Like NUS, NTU. So we'll see. We'll see if it works.
Wow. I look forward to hearing about how it goes.
I will let you know.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. And it's almost like, what's that? What's that really large word? Oh, biomimicry? Is it called like it's like imitating nature with like your own processes? And
I mean, right now, like I have to tell you, I am just a person who with no science background, right? Mm-hmm. Who's just playing around in her kitchen. So I need other people, especially if you're listening right now and if you're watching us and if you're like, oh, actually, yeah, I know how these processes work. Mm-hmm. Probably reach out to us, either one of us, right? And let's work together, because I feel like if the more people get involved, especially if you have something to contribute, the better, the faster the results can happen, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Collaboration is key.
And collaboration is key, yes. Mm.
Thank you so much for your time.
No problem. I'm just glad to be to have like this conversation.
Yeah. No, and
like
thank you.
The more people know about this, the better it is, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe other people would try it in the kitchens and then let us know about it.
Yeah, exactly. And if anyone's listening or watching, if you do try it at home,
please let me know. I want to see.
Yeah, reach out to Hannah and show her photos of your SCOBYs.
Yes, please. It'll be so exciting. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I really hope that happens. And I'm definitely gonna try it when
please try. Yeah. If you need SCOBY, you know who to find.
If you like how this podcast is produced and you want the same quality for your show, reach out to us at reach@podcastmate.co. So we can talk about how to help make your podcast production an easy breezy journey. All you gotta do is press record. PodcastMate produces podcasts for iconic brands and market leaders. You can also check out our website at podcastmate.co. That is podcastmate.co. Whenever you're ready, we'll be here for you.
My conversation with Hannah really reminded me of how sustainability isn't defined by how it usually looks on the internet or in mainstream narratives. So sustainability also looks like growing your own SCOBYs, getting used to the smell of wet socks, and being comfortable with the process of fermentation. It looks like tinkering and creating biomaterials in your own kitchen, experimenting with natural food dyes and from food scraps. I am so glad that Hannah spoke about her thoughts and vulnerabilities about being a fashion educator, trying to speak about concepts and practices of sustainability. I really related to Hannah's 3 a.m. thoughts from feeling inadequate and small despite doing the best that we can. Hannah is an educator in and out of her classrooms, and perhaps me hosting this podcast. When she was speaking about, you know, the sort of process of fermentation when it comes to creating your own biomaterials, your own kombucha leather at home, it reminded me of a publication titled An Invitation to Radical Tenderness, where the authors call for readers to ferment ourselves, mourn our illusions, and compost our shit. I'm not kidding. It literally says that in one of the pages of the publication. So I didn't understand what fermenting ourselves could look like in practice then, but I think I have a clearer idea of it now. Fermenting ourselves could possibly look like existing with intention. It looks like making changes in our own lives in the tiny, imperfect ways that we know how, but never beating ourselves up for not doing enough or feeling like we are not doing enough. It looks like balancing doing the work, resisting the system, but at the same time holding space for rest and recalibration. A friend once shared a quote with me where the author mentions the importance of inch deep, miles wide change as opposed to miles deep, inch wide change. Right? And yeah, I'm just going to let's take a minute to sort of process that, maybe allow ourselves the time and energy and space to be a SCOBY, just live with intention, exist with intention. What sort of transpired from my conversation with Hannah is to also talk a bit about the history of our materials, or the history of the materials that we are extremely familiar with, that we live with, materials like cotton and polyester, which I would be sharing with you very soon. So stay tuned for that. Thank you so much for tuning in and for listening in to Rewear at the Fashion Pulpit. And I will see you again really soon. And you'll hear me again really soon. All right, bye.
We would like to thank our friends over at Podcast Mate who produced this podcast. Production manager, Chair Abora. Creative and marketing lead, Michael Alonso. Video producer, Ian Velasquez. Sound design and podcast producer, Lemuel Morata. Executive director, Nesh Maiwela. Rewear is created by The Fashion Pulpit, a production in partnership with Podcast Mate. Hosted by Sing Yun Shin.